Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
Hello, infidels. Hello, infidels. It's been a long, long, long decade in coming. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America. That's my new motto that I created just for you for the new opening. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America. The new hours, of course, are the ones you're listening to. Prime time, drive time, 3 to 6 Eastern, noon to 3 Pacific on the best stations in the United States of America. And I want to go to the news, and believe me, there's a lot of news. We have a new communism emerging around the globe, from New York City to the White House to the Vatican itself. They may call it progressivism, but it's really the same old Marxism, the same exact rhetoric, and I will prove it to you. When I wrote my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I was not specifically thinking of the new mayor of New York, but he may as well have read the book and then reverse-engineered it, because that's exactly what he has in mind for the people of New York, which is to make certain that poverty trickles up to the middle class. Because the fact of the matter is, the rhetoric, whether it be that of Obama or of de Blasio or Bill Clinton — did you hear Bill Clinton at the inauguration? Listen to Bill Clinton at the inauguration of the new socialist mayor of New York. You got to hear this.
This inequality problem bedevils the entire country, and I can tell you from my work, much of the world. But it is not just a moral outrage. It is a horrible constraint on economic growth and on giving people the...
Oh, you get the picture, right? Now, what's fascinating about this, whether it be Bill Clinton to the preacher at the inauguration calling New York City a plantation in 2014, the left wing is working around the clock to split the country farther and farther apart, divide us and conquer us. They now call themselves progressives, but what they really do is they take from the working middle class to give to the very, very rich supporters who pay no taxes. I can prove it. GE earned over $5 billion last year and paid zero in taxes. Microsoft, Google, etc., using double Irish finagling in order to pay nothing. And these are the friends. These are the friends of the progressives. And what do they do with the money? Well, of course, first they line their own pockets, the pockets of their cronies. They give to the welfare leeches, the fake disability criminals, the illegal aliens who take all and give nothing back but their cheap labor. Here we have Bill Clinton, who is a 0.01% man himself, talking about inequality. A Clinton who hangs around with the richest people on earth like Ron Burkle, Bill Gates, Stephen Bing. A Clinton who earns between $200,000 to $350,000 a speech, and they're talking about inequality. Well, they've been pushing Hillary as a moderate lately. So do you think that means it's going to be a Hillary de Blasio ticket to shore up the so-called progressive vote? How many progressives are there? How many progressives can there be? All we hear about is progressive this, progressive that. What about the American taxpayer? What about the fact that every poll in America shows that we, the working middle class, are the largest majority? America is a center-right nation. It is not a left-wing fanatic nation. So they've been pushing Hillary as a moderate lately, right? What does that mean? Well, then they need a de Blasio on the left to shore up the so-called communist progressive vote. So on the other side, who is it going to be? Well, I'm looking ahead now. It's going to be Christie. I know you don't want to hear it, but that's who the Republicans are going to push forward. That's where the money is. And logic would then dictate that Christie would pick a conservative such as Colonel Allen West to bring the conservatives back to the voting booth. But my guess is that Christie will pick a leftist like Ms. Snow to try to reach out for the more liberal voter, therefore damning the Republicans to the dustbin of history. What do you think the chances would be for the GOP to do the right thing? The answer is about zero. And I think their chances of winning in 2016 are about the same. Welcome to Trickle Up Poverty. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. Many of you heard of me, but you really have never heard me. All I can say is give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America. And by the way, we trademarked it. so don't try to steal it. There's plenty of news out there. Here we have a blizzard coming into New York, which is sort of not unusual. When I was a boy, there were blizzards in December, January, February, and March. But now, of course, the global warning con men and women trapped on the ice in the Antarctic are calling today's storm a result of global warming. I actually think that the global warming scam artists, beginning with Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone crime family, in my estimation, the Gorleone crime family should be forced to pay reparations for the global warming lies they have pushed and the billions upon billions of dollars they have stolen from the Treasury in the form of grants, contracts, carbon credits, and whatnot. But, you know, that's the news. There's a lot more that I'm going to do today than that with you on the show, than those two topics. I want to welcome you first to the show. I haven't done that. You realize, of course, I'm in a new time slot. Many of you have been with me from the beginning. And I'd like to ask you something. What is your first memory of the Savage Nation radio show? Remember, I began in 1994 on a local station. It was KSFO in San Francisco. And I will give out a free book to the listener who can prove that he's the or he or she is the longest listening listener. And that will happen during the show. But I want to ask you something else. And this is the real question. I'm not going to ask it of you now. I'm going to take your calls at 855-400-7282. You know why I want to take your calls? Because if you get through my call screener and you get on the Savage Nation on this memorable day, you will reach more people than you've met in your entire life. I want you to think about that. You may feel powerless. You may feel that the old letter to the editor days are over, and they are over. When have you last written a letter to the editor? Never. The editors are all left-wing pinko fanatics who throw your American letters in the garbage bin. So what do you have left? You have talk radio. That's all you have left. So if you get through the screener at 855-400-7282, you'll remember this day for the rest of your life. I first want to thank some people who made this possible. I know you think, well, why do it? Because I'll tell you why, because nothing happens by itself. I want to thank Lou and John Dickey, who own the Cumulus Media Networks, for giving me this incredible opportunity. Just remember what this is. I'm on the biggest stations in America. I'm not a newcomer to the business. I've been around for 20 years this March 21st. But I've been on a lot of different stations. And they saw something in me. They believed in me, and they gave me this shot. And believe me, I'll make the most of it. Oh, yeah, I've published 28 books. I've always had a large audience. Before I switched syndicators, I had the third largest audience in America, estimated to be between 8 and 10 million listeners. It then went down when I went to the night slot. My estimation is that given 6 months to a year, this show will be the biggest show in America. And I want to remind you of something else. The numbers don't matter that much to me. Because on the Internet, on Internet radio, I beat Rush. God bless Rush. God bless Rush. He's been around a long time. But check it out. Check the data. The younger people love Savage. The younger people listen to me on their iPhones. It's that simple. But who else do I owe this to? Well, I owe it to my deceased mother, Mother Savage, who, if there is a heaven, is probably tuning in right now as she's cooking for God. Wasn't for her, I wouldn't have had my sense of humor. I wouldn't have had the visits to Radio City Music Hall when I was a little boy to see radio behind the scenes, which stood with me for the rest of my life. I owe it to my father, dead since 1970. He used to listen to the radio, smoke the Philip Morris. I'd lie in his lap. I'd get that secondhand smoke to invigorate my mind. And we listened to the theater of the mind. He used to listen to the Green Hornet, the Inner Sanctum. I remember him saying to me, you know, I like radio better than the movies. I said, why, Dad? He said, because radio is a theater of the mind. You have to imagine things. Well, it's still a theater of the mind. Nothing has changed. I want to thank Janet Weiner, who has slayed all the dragons along the way. I want to thank my son, Russ Weiner, for standing with me during the darkest hours of my life. And I want to thank you, the listener of the Savage Nation, for being with me all these years and for moving with me to the night show and coming with me today to the day show. There are many other people to thank, and I can't mention them all on the program right now. And it's not that I'm too emotional at all. I have no emotional feelings right now, because I'm too into the moment. In the studio right now, as I speak with you across America on the greatest stations in the country, and I don't have to mention them, they're the stations that everyone has ever wanted to be on from the day they entered radio. I know the day I entered radio, these are magical names. I can name them all, but I won't do it because the other hundreds that I won't mention will feel slighted. But you know what they are. Everybody wants to be on them. My competitor, who used to be on them, lost 52 stations. I got them all. I'll make the most of them. There's only one live being in the studio with me right now, and his name is Teddy. He's a 10.5-pound toy poodle. He's 10.5 years old, and he's been with me from the beginning. He's the smartest dog in the world because he's listened to every radio show over the last 10 years, and I'm sure some of it has seeped in. I do not think he would vote for a progressive, let's put it to you that way. He knows that all that would mean is they'd steal his bones and tell him they're doing it for the sake of equality. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. By the way, go over to michaelsavage.com when you get a spare minute and take a look at that incredible picture of me and Ted in my 1970 Jag XKE convertible, which I bought this last year. You'll see a picture that is so beautiful. It's unbelievable. Then there's a great story from the Daily News. Michael Savage takes over Sean Hannity's slot. It was published on Monday by David Hinckley. It's a fabulous article, but what's interesting is the print edition of the New York Daily News had a different headline. It was called Civilized Savage, which I thought was interesting. I mean, the headline on the internet was conservative radio host Michael Savage will now hold forth on WABC in the 3-6 slot. He'll take over from Sean Hannity. He promises an interesting Obamacare-free zone. Okay, but the headline in the newspaper was Civilized Savage. I mean, I can almost ask you this question. Have I become too civilized? Now let's go to the callers. Daniel on KSFO, I think you're a winner. Daniel, welcome from KSFO land. Go ahead. What's your topic?
Hi, Michael. I haven't spoke to you on the radio in probably 18 years. You said you started in KSFO in 94. Actually, no, that's not true. KGO on the weekend.
You're right. And I did it as a sort of honey trap to see who would remember. My first radio show was on the sister station in an overnight slot that catered to the progressive losers who hated anyone who made a living. And I'll never forget that night as long as I live. I did a fill-in slot. I had another career. I was fairly successful. But I wanted to do radio because all the books I had published previous to that, I would do book tours. And some of the great radio guys would say to me, you know, you got a great voice. You'd be good on the radio. Why don't you consider a career in radio? Well, that was like saying, why don't you become an astronaut? How do you become a talk show host? I didn't know how to do it. So I did as a test in 1994. I had such hatred come at me from the so-called progressives of the Bay Area because all I did was talk about the damage that affirmative action had done to qualified white males. They went ballistic. They went crazy. They were so hateful that they would make Bill de Blasio look like a conservative. I drove home at 6 o'clock that morning. And the whole way home, I looked in my rearview mirror. I thought I was being followed. And I said when I got home, when my wife and kids woke up, I said to them, I will never do radio again as long as I live. I can't take the hatred of these left-wingers. They're sick. Well, of course, the next day the phones rang off the hook. The program director said, you're incredible. Would you like a full-time job? I said, I'll never do a night show again. And, of course, then I did day shows, etc. I want to send you a free copy of any of my books. I'll send you the novel, A Time for War, which memorializes the crash of the helicopter, the old flying Sea Cow, where 22 Navy SEALs were sent to their deaths by someone in the Obama administration. I dedicated this novel, A Time for War, because I tried to awaken America. Why did they put all those SEAL Team 6 heroes on an old helicopter? Why didn't they break them up into three fast strike helicopters? Who made this decision in the Defense Department? Who made it in the Obama administration? Why are the Republicans silent on this? These are questions, man, and I want them answered, and I want a hearing, and you want to hear equality, you want to hear fairness. How about fairness to the families whose hearts are broken by somebody in the Obama administration who killed those Navy SEALs? Would that be equality? Stay on the line. I'll send you a book. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. Kick working during the day. I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of the day. That's looming now. After 3 o'clock, I don't know what to do with myself. I have to take up flying, the saxophone. I have to take up modern folk dance. I have to reread Lenin, Marx. I'll have to reread them in the original Russian. Of course, I don't have to reread Marx and Lenin. I don't have to reread Freud and Jung. I read them all, and frankly, we're hearing it all over again in the progressive socialist communist movement that is alive and well. How many progressives can there be in this country? There aren't that many. There are a small faction of academic losers, a very tiny percentage of politicians, and yet they pretend they speak for the people. They don't speak for the people. I have a simple solution to save America. I don't think it could be enacted because the Republicans don't exist and there's no guts out there. But here's the answer. And I'll give it to you real simple. You go on unemployment insurance, you lose the right to vote. You get welfare, you lose the right to vote. And then you have an incentive to find a job and get off unemployment. Then you vote again. Because if you continue to grant the right to vote to people who are sucking the system dry, we will all lose. There'll be nothing left. Look at Cuba. Look at every other Marxist country on the planet. And take a look at what happens when you let the people dictate the terms of a nation. They will eat you alive like locusts. They will decimate the middle class. They will take every dime out of your pocket and they'll still say it's unfair because you may have a better pair of shoes, a better house, and a better wife. They'll want your shoes, your house, and your wife. That's the way it works. You go on welfare? Too bad. Okay, we'll take care of you. But here's what's going to happen. You're not voting while you're on welfare. Then the people who work and pay taxes can determine the course of the nation, the ship, the nation. You can determine the direction of the ship if you have a vote in it. How can you have a vote in it if you're busy working and the so-called progressive academic communist socialist movement has nothing to do but scheme around the clock on methods to steal the real democracy, the shreds of democracy that are left in this nation? What do you think of my idea? Should people on welfare lose the right to vote and regain it when they are off welfare? What's wrong with that idea? Tell me what is wrong with that idea. Where is it written in the social contract that if you're living on the back of my labor, you should have the same rights and benefits that I have? Tell me where it's written. Tell me where it's written that if you're sticking your fingers in my pocket to take half of my salary away from me before I even get it, that you should have the same rights in determining the course of the ship of state. Tell me where it's written. Show me where. Show me where that's written. Over 12 million grifters on federal disability under Obama. Don't tell me they're all disabled. You know they're not.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
What am I going to do today? I had a dream. I'm going to talk about a dream I had about a dinner I had with Barack Obama. Now, for those of you who are familiar with michaelsavage.com, you know where I'm going today because it's been up since yesterday. I predated this show by saying what I was going to do today on my website. I did have a dream, and I have slightly psychic powers. I know you're going to say, he's making it up. All right, I did. I have slightly psychic powers. Sometimes I can foresee what's going to come, and it happens. The same night that I dreamed about dinner in a Chinese restaurant with Barack Obama, I dreamed of a college friend of mine who lives near me who I haven't seen for 3 or 4 years. We had a falling out. He's a very liberal lawyer. He insulted me. We never talked again. And I thought of him that night in the same area of the dream state. I thought I'd run into him again in a certain market. And I swear, as God is my witness, yesterday in the middle of the rainstorm, in the middle of the drought rainstorm, I went to this market and there was my friend. And we had a long talk about everything. So now what does it have to do with politics? Well, everything. So the dream, I was in a broken pickup truck with Barack Obama. Somebody else was driving. I was struck in the middle. Mr. Obama was to the right. And there were several people behind us. We were going down Broadway in San Francisco. And I said, could you guys please drop me here on the corner of San Salm? I want to go to a Chinese restaurant. And I said, as I got out of the truck, I said, Mr. Obama, would you like to have a meal with me and sit down and talk about the differences that we have? I said, you grew up in Hawaii. I lived there for a while. You like Chinese food. How about clearing the air with me, Michael Savage? You met with Bill O'Reilly. He didn't ask you many questions that millions of conservatives are fuming about. I said, to end the mistrust and hatred, Mr. Obama, to end the hatred and the mistrust in this country that is infecting the air of America itself, no cameras, no makeup, just Michael Savage and Barack Obama sharing Hunan dishes. I know you'd like them, Mr. Obama. No cameras, no microphones, no notes over shrimps and Napa cabbage.
over Hunan velvet chicken, over crispy meat pie, and steamed pork dumplings. Or perhaps you don't eat any of that, and you want shrimp combination fried rice. Or perhaps you like dry sautéed string beans, or garlic chicken, or chicken with Peking sauce, or smoked ham with string beans. Why don't we just sit down and talk about what's plaguing America? And I wrote down these questions Sunday morning, and I'm going to ask you, the listener, to tell me if I missed anything. I'm going to ask you to tell me if I had a dinner with Barack Obama, whether it be in a cheap Chinese slop joint, which I love, what other questions would you want Mr. Obama to answer to put to rest some of this enmity that is infecting America? Question one, Mr. Obama, why did you insist on pushing into the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department a lawyer who defended the assassin of a police officer, a lawyer who has such a hatred for the police and law enforcement that he called them an occupying fascist presence? Over pork dumplings, Mr. Obama, why did you just sign an executive order making it possible for foreigners with terror ties to become citizens? Mr. Obama, over fresh sautéed squid, why did you refuse to send military help to the people trapped in Benghazi? Mr. Obama, why do you attack Israel and have John Kerry threaten the Jewish people with another intifada and boycotts unless they give away half their nation? And now that we're up to the country-style smoked ham, either hot or mild, Mr. Obama, number five, why have you fired so many combat generals on such slim charges at a time when China is on the march and the Islamo-fascists are stronger than ever? Number six, Mr. Obama, boy, this Hunan orange sauce chicken is good, don't you say? Mr. Obama, why have you dismissed almost the entire nuclear command structure on trumped-up charges? Number seven, why do you keep expanding the welfare state when the economy is so weak, such as expanding unemployment payments, not reining in the 12 million and growing army of Americans cashing in on disability payments, Mr. Obama? Number eight, boy, this rice is nice. They do make it for us, you know, fresh. Number eight, Mr. Obama, why do you keep pushing for amnesty for 30 or more million illegal aliens, mainly Mexicans and other illegal aliens, when they're here illegally and we cannot afford them, when they won't learn English or our history, when they want Mexican flags at sporting events and speak of the gringo with such contempt? Mr. Obama, it doesn't make sense. Even the Swiss just voted to curtail immigration, saying it was destroying the Swiss culture. It can't be that many Republicans who have left America and have now voted in the Swiss elections, can it be, Mr. Obama? Number nine, Mr. Obama, why won't you stop the IRS from targeting conservative groups, harassing them with audits and blocking their nonprofit status? Do you like the spicy shrimp with bean curd, Mr. Obama? It tastes very good. Here's question 10, Mr. Obama. Why won't you stop the NSA from spying on innocent Americans? Again, if you're listening to the Savage Nation, these are questions that O'Reilly didn't ask in his interview. And I had a dream that Mr. Obama agreed to have Chinese food with me. And it's sort of an invitation to Mr. Obama to put aside the enmity and the hatred in this country. There's no better way than to meet a conservative member of the opposition party. Because I, Michael Savage, am not a politician. I've never been a politician. I've never been a lawyer. I don't intend to be a lawyer. I don't intend to be a politician. I am an American, and I have questions. So, Mr. Obama, again, I address another question to you. Why won't you prosecute gangsters on Wall Street and those corrupt senators and congressmen who are stealing billions of dollars through front groups and their relatives with fraudulent federal contracts, Mr. Obama? Number 12. Boy, this garlic chicken is very good. It beats Safeway. Why won't you approve the Keystone Pipeline, which will bring much-needed oil from Canada to refineries in America? For Americans, Mr. Obama, it makes common sense. Instead of forcing the Canadians to ship this precious black gold to China. Mr. Obama, question number 13. You closed the World War II Memorial during the government shutdown, while at the same time you granted thousands of illegal aliens the right to the Capitol Mall to protest existing immigration laws. Can you explain to all of the veterans who hang on my every word what you were thinking, Mr. Obama? 855-400-7282 is the phone number. I've asked you a several number of questions. I have many others. I've limited it to 13 or 14. I have many more. I'm talking about a dream I had. Sometimes my dreams are just dreams. Sometimes they predict what's coming, as it did with an old friend that I hadn't seen in years, and as God is my witness, I ran into him the very next day in the very same place I thought I'd see him. Is this precognition? I don't know. Sometimes some of us can see around the corner. Some of us have the ability to see ahead. Actually, anyone with logic, I told this to a friend of mine who has made a fortune as an inventor, and he said it's not intuition for him, nor is it precognition for him. He said it's simple brains. He said if you put two and two together, you can add up and come up with four. So he's a rationalist. I'm highly trained in science, certain sciences. I have a super rational brain that runs like a HAL 9000 sometimes, and sometimes I run purely on intuition. Sometimes I run on horoscopes. Sometimes I run in the Bible. Sometimes I run on fear and loathing. Sometimes I don't run. I just hide in a bed. I lock the door, load the guns, and put the bark machine on. I don't even have a dog named Teddy. It's all an invention. No, Teddy exists. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Savage Nation. Now, we also have something else for you that is eerie, and that was a speech that Obama gave before he became president about a private national security force. I'm going to play it in a minute. Here is a president who now has information on every one of us, on every politician, on every journalist, on every world leader. They've been using it against all of us and against every world leader and against every politician and against every justice in the land to curtail them and frighten them into submission. And now we have a president who just might do the impossible and the unthinkable. I want you to listen to this following clip.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
Now, if you couple that with the fact that he's purged the military of most of its top combat commanders, including 34 officers in the nuclear command just the other day on trumped up charges, and then you ask yourself, who is he putting into our nuclear silos to press the buttons and why? Or is he ever going to put anyone in there? Is he going to fill it with Black Panthers or members of ACORN? Who's going to be put in there? If he fires the guys who actually know how to run the nuclear bunkers, who's going to replace them? How can he just summarily throw out 34 men on trumped up charges after firing one general after another who just might have stood up to something that's about to take place right under our noses? What would you think would happen if Obama announced with another flowery speech in his great voice that for the sake of national security, he's creating a national security force of police that answers only to him because that will make it safer for you? That we can't trust those ornery police in your neighborhood. We can't trust those ornery police in the government because many of them were there before he got there. So he's going to create a police force of people he knows are trustworthy. They will become his own social security force, so to speak, or national security force, if you want to put it that way. I use social security for the initials only. I mean, you want to talk about it, or you think this is too far afield? Is this too far afield from reality? Could he do this? Who would stop him? Where is the opposition? People are asking. They can do anything they want. They have total power. They have absolute power right now. There's no opposition party. Where is the opposition? I believe that they are on drugs, and I've called for them peeing in a cup for years now. If the average American worker has to pee in a cup to get a job in a corporation, why shouldn't the so-called representatives of the people have to do the same? I'd like to know what drugs they're on. It might explain a lot of things, but let's put that aside for a minute. Again, I want to explain what I said to you earlier. The Fourth Estate, the press, was supposed to be a watchdog. It's become a lapdog. That we know. There's no need to beat that up. We've all heard it. So what do I mean? Here is one of the exam questions that will be on your first quarter exam coming up in February on the Savage graduate exam. What does Dr. Savage mean when he says the Fourth Estate has become the fifth column? Now, I can answer that myself, and you can take notes. I'll make it very simple.
You don't have to go beyond college, high school to figure this out. Fourth Estate was refers to the press. But what's the fifth column? Most people don't know what a fifth column is. During the Spanish Civil War, there was a Spanish general, and he was marching with his loyal troops. And he noticed that within his loyal troops, there was a Trojan horse brigade that had slipped in. The fifth column was that group of troops that were not loyal to that Spanish general. They were, in fact, troops loyal to the enemy. They had put on the uniform of that army, of that Spanish general's army, and they marched as a fifth column, pretending they were part of that loyal army, but in fact they were marching on behalf of the enemy. That's the fifth column. So when I say that the Fourth Estate has become the fifth column, you can pretty much figure out exactly what I mean. I want to shift, though, to something entirely different. The power of the purse doesn't exist. It's a myth the Republicans are putting out to mollify you. What they can do to overturn an executive order, and listen carefully, because you're going to hear people saying, oh, you can refuse to fund it. Ah, bunch of garbage. They can stop an executive order. They can overturn parts of an executive order. If the executive order is based on a statute, Congress can change the statute, thereby nullifying the order. You heard it on the Savage Nation. It's in Stop the Coming Civil War, the plan to save the country. We voted, damn it. Now Congress has to act in January. I realize that Congress can't overturn this executive order in November or December. That's why this creep is doing it now, because he still has his corrupt cronies there to do what he wants. But come January, the first day, instead of all the ceremony, call it back in session, go to power, go to the mats, and change the statute. Day one, Republican Congress, change the statute, nullify the order. Then take it to the Supreme Court. The only instance in which this does not apply is if the president is acting pursuant to an exclusive power granted to him by the Constitution. But Obama's executive order on immigration would not be such a case. It is not constitutionally based. Congress has the power to repeal a presidential order or terminate the underlying authority upon which the action is predicated. Who said that? The Congressional Research Service noted that in December 2011. Again, you heard that on the Savage Nation. Do I have to teach Boehner and McConnell what they can do? No, they know it. They just don't want to do it. I'm trying to tell you, it's all a giant game. McConnell, the gobbler, Boehner, the clink, are in on this executive amnesty with Obama. They're just going to say, oh my, we really oppose it. We're going to cut the purse strings. They're lying to you. They're lying to you because Podesta and the others behind the scenes, including... This you're not going to believe. You know the woman who wrote this little game he's about to play? You know who she is? She's a lawyer who's been there since Ted Kennedy. She's been embedded in this government since Ted Kennedy. She's a radical leftist. She wrote the statute upon which Obama's going to claim he has the right to grant amnesty to the millions of illegal aliens. It's all a fraud. He does not have the power to do so. He can overturn this executive order. They can overturn parts of the executive order. It is based on a statute. It is not based on a constitutional requirement. They can nullify the order. As far as refusing to fund the activities, I'll repeat myself until I'm blue in the face. It's a lie. You're living in fantasy land. Read pages 176 and 177 of Stop the Coming Civil War. And I blew up. I blew it. I'm sorry to tell you. I just couldn't take another minute of this charade that's going on between the Republicans and the Democrats. Again, I'm going to read you page 176, because many of you are buying the lie that they're going to defund the executive order on amnesty. Here's what I wrote. If you think Congress can stop this administration's subversive undermining of the Constitution and the laws of the United States by cutting funding, you're in a fantasy land. Republican leaders like John Boehner and former Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan just don't get it. They refuse to understand that they're the victims of a master of legislative sleight of hand who has already taken over many governmental functions that should be handled by the other branches of our federal government. Both of these leaders have engaged in discussions with the president about a new immigration law that would effectively grant amnesty to the illegals already in the country. So Boehner is in on the fix. You understand that? You get it? They're not going to cut the funding. This man has done one thing after another to gut the Constitution. So don't go for the story that they're telling you. The fact of the matter is, there is only one way to do it, and I told you that way.
Savage.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
I was going to do the news, and I may do it later, but you know what I really want to talk about? I want to talk about death and dying, and I'll tell you why. Because I couldn't sleep last night, and I'll tell you why. Because I was thinking about embalming, and I'll tell you why. You see, before I went to sleep after the show, I tend to watch movies. And I sometimes watch a rerun of The Sopranos, maybe for the 50th time. I know every sequence and almost every phrase in it. And I'm always amazed at how well that series was done. And last night it was a series where Uncle Junior announces he has cancer and he's 71. And the Burt Young character, I don't know if you know the Burt Young character. He's a fabulous character actor. Burt Young plays the old man who was a barber who was really an assassin. And he's sent out on one last evil deed, which is to kill Mustang Sal for whatever reason. You don't even have to watch the series to know what I'm talking about. It's one of the best scenes in the entire series. When this old man goes in to kill Mustang Sal, who Mustang Sal thinks he's coming in to help him, and they get into a struggle. Mustang Sal is in his 30s, this guy's in his 70s. Blah, 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 and he kills him. So it's his last kill, and he dies of a heart attack on the way back at Staten Island. His car crashes into a post, and he's dead. Now, the actor is Gerald Tomaso de Luis. By the way, that's Burt Young's real name. He's a fabulous actor. And I was going to ask you something about death and dying after I talked about my thoughts on the issue, which is this. Do you live with the idea of death and dying, or do you put it out of your mind? There was a book in the 1970s called The Teachings of Don Juan that many listeners who are of the liberal, ex-liberal persuasion would have read. I wouldn't think that any conservative, young conservatives know that book. It's not that important. In the 70s, though, it was an interesting book. And it's about a guy who goes into the areas of Mexico, and he meets an old healer, a Mexican folk healer, by the name a Yaqui Indian, who the author Castaneda was first introduced to at a bus stop in Yuma, Arizona. And so in the early 60s, he tells the story about Don Juan and what the story is about. But it was a big book about peyote, which I've never used, psychedelic mushrooms, datura, and peyote, found in the Mexican deserts, which were allegedly used to reach states of non-ordinary reality in the teachings he conveyed to Carlos. When he goes into that other world, that dream world, he learns from this curandero that people from the third world, especially primitive people from the third world, live with death all the time. We in the world that we live in push it away. We don't want to know about it. We use sports, entertainment, whatever. Perhaps it's a healthier way. Who knows? But it's inevitable. So I will ask you a question. Last night I watched The Sopranos. Burt Young dies. And his son, the actor, cries and says he was young. He was only 71 or he's 67. Then I watched another movie about a guy dying in his 60s or whatever. I start to try to not think about it. But meanwhile, I have a dream, a horrible dream, about that I'm laying there in some funeral parlor, and they want to embalm me. And I jump up from the embalming, and I say, no, 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 you can't do me. You can't cut me open. And I run out of the home. And I say, what a crazy dream that is. So I said to myself, why should I do the news today? Everyone can do the news. And yet there's not a listener to my show. I don't care whether you're young, old, black, white, gay, straight, man, woman, boy, man, boy, girl, dog, any conscious being lives with this all the time. And I want to know from you, the audience, A, do you really live with this, or is this considered too somber for you? Or is it too depressing for you? Do you run from this thought, or do you live with the thought? Have you come to terms with the thought? The real question for the audience that would be of interest, I think, is how do you live with your thoughts about death and dying? What are your coping methods? What do you do when the thought of your end comes to you? That's what I'd like to know. I think that that's as important a topic as any, because it's a topic that no one will talk about in America. And remember, this is a talk show. This is not about Obama and Harry Reid and Boehner and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and this one and that one. They're not the be-all and end-all of the world. Talk radio is about talk. It's about topics. It's not only about politics. At least that's what I think. So if you care to join the conversation on that topic, you can. I'll get to the news momentarily. Now, there are news stories. I mean, there's pretty good news out there, to be honest with you, but I'm not ready for it. I said to myself, I'm going to go and do a show the way I used to do it years ago when I first began. Do you know when I first began a radio in the 90s? I'm going to tell you the truth. I did very little show prep on some days. Some days I would tune out of the news. I would take a ferry from Marin County, California, into San Francisco. It would drop me at the ferry terminal. It landed at 2:55, if I remember correctly. And my show started at 3:05. I'd run across the street to the KSFO studios and be on the air within a minute of the mic going hot. And I would do some of my most intuitively fun shows, best shows, most entertaining shows, insightful shows that the audience came to love. But I want to open with this topic today, which is death and dying. And I'd like to ask you, what are your coping methods for this topic? The reason I'm doing death and dying is very simple. Because I had a nightmare about being embalmed last night, which is so freaky. And, you know, you jump up with the whole inevitable thing, and then you push it away, use all your coping mechanisms, and then you run to the other side, which is choose life. But I said to myself, I can't be the only person in America who thinks about death and dying. I've been thinking about death and dying since I'm about six. I've always been focused on the next world, which is probably one of the reasons I'm so productive in this world. If you go back and look at my writings going back to when I was a teenager just writing journals, I always knew, you know, that there's the time, tick, 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 the clock, the whole thing, the Dolly picture, the clock, the bent clock. Any artist is aware of the whole idea of death. What do you think motivates artists? What do you think drives artists but the sense of time? It's all about time, and I'll take it to another level with you. I want you to go to any website that you go to for the news, whether it's the Drudge Report, Fox News, Savage.com. If you look at any security, and any story rather, it's all about your fear of death. Every story is about the human fear of death. I'll give you the headline, okay? NSA radio pathway to crack computer, says Drudge. Secret spy court judges want no changes. Okay, Obama says trust me. What is that about but a fear of death and dying? It means the government is trying to put a knife through your freedom, trying to ensnare you, trying to entrap you, trying to imprison you. That's what you fear. So it's a sense of a loss of freedom. And a sense of a loss of freedom is a sense of loss of life. And a sense of a loss of life is a fear of the other side. And so that's why I asked you today on the Savage Nation. I mean, look, I can do the news. I have the newspapers I'm going to get to today. I'm going to get to the newspapers, the New York Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, to show you the omega of news and what it's become. We don't have any alphas anymore in the newspaper business. But almost every story in the newspapers is about a fear of loss of freedom or a fear of loss of death in one way or the other. Whatever it is, look at it and analyze it. But I don't think it's morbid to talk about death and dying. It's part of the human experience, like talking about birth and living. I could talk about birth and living. But most of us are not that interested in birth and living. What we do is we run every day as fast as we can away from the topic that I am talking about. We run from it with alcohol. We run from it with marijuana. We run from it with cocaine. We run from it with virtually every drug on the planet. Man has been running from the fear of death since man has been on the planet. One of my graduate interests and degrees is a master's degree in anthropology, before I went on for another master's degree and then a PhD. I've always been interested in how other cultures view death and dying. And believe me, it's not the same as we view death and dying in this country. Most Americans walk around as though they're immortal. Most Americans talk as if they're immortal. Most Americans act as if they're immortal. And yet they know that they're not. Look at the women with the Botox and the surgery. Look at all of the surgery. What is that all about? What is all of this beauty treatment about? It's an attempt to control the aging process. And what about my obsession with food and vitamins? Well, obviously, it's because I didn't want to die at 40. I didn't want to die at 50. I wanted to make sure I could live as long as I could live healthfully. Okay, so that's what that's about. It makes sense to try to keep yourself looking as well and feeling as well as you can. But the inevitable is there around the corner. So what do you do? Well, some turn to religion. What do you think theology is about? And what do you think prayer is about? Is prayer not about eternal life in another world? Whether you be a Christian or a Jew, don't you believe that that's what your prayer is about? Every prayer, if you read every prayer, it's about the next life. And if you're not a Christian and you're not a Jew, If you're a Buddhist, is it not about reincarnation? Is it not about the many lives that you've lived and the many lives you will live? And about karma, how you act here is how you'll be placed there? So these are very big, big, big topics, and I think it's a fabulous topic. I think it goes outside the ken of the average talk radio show, which is where I want to go every day. What I have found in my anthropology years, living in third world places when they were really third world places, where there was no electricity, no television, no radios, in villages with straw mats, way back in the late 60s, collecting plants, medicinal plants. And the nights I would drink endless amounts of kava with my Fijian host, we'd go to another place. And I don't mean I would leave my body, I'd be very much in my body, but believe me, I saw things that were not in the three-dimensional world that we live in on a regular basis. And I told a story once that I've had five or six near misses in my life, and nobody knows when the seventh one is coming or how many lives a cat has. But I remember in the Fiji Islands, I was coming back from a village where we had a Yangona ceremony all night, and something in me, everyone fell asleep, and I said to my guest, I have to leave, I have to leave, I have to leave. And he said, where are you going? It's in the middle of the night. I said, I have to go back to the main village. I don't know why. So he said, no, don't go, don't go, don't go. I said, no, I'm going to go. They said, well, look, we're not going to go with you. It's too late. It's too dark. I said, don't worry about me. I'll get myself back. So I walked back along the edge of a ravine that fell to the sea about 300 feet below. I didn't know how much earth there was under my feet. But the next day, my guide, Domenico, came running to me and he said, do you have any idea what you walked on at night? I said, no, I walked on the path along the edge of the bluff back to the main village. And he said, yes, but let me take you back there so you can see with your own eyes how close you came to falling to your death. And we walked back, and there was less than an inch of earth on that ridge between my foot and the sea, the pounding sea below. I have no idea what drove me to walk back to the village, nor do I know whether there was an angel who put her hand underneath my foot. All I'm saying to you is that wasn't the first time that something of that nature had occurred in my life. And I'm sure everyone listening to the show has experienced near misses and said, holy God, what was that about? You know, and you change your life for a little bit after that. Once when I was 9 years old playing with my cousin Sam in front of his house in Jamaica, Queens, I don't remember the street, a car hit me. We were playing ball in the street, back and forth, and a car just banged into me on the side. He wasn't speeding, but it hit me. I got knocked down. I was dazed. To this day, I fantasize that I was actually killed that day, and all the rest of this is a dream. Can you imagine that this whole radio show is a dream and that you're not real? That I'm not real? That this is all imaginary? That's impossible. But I don't think I'm the only one who's had that experience and that kind of, transition to thinking, is this really a dream? Because we are spiritual creatures. And I don't want to get too preachy, but I will get mildly preachy. I think that when I talk about family values, as I have for the last few days, when I talk about borders, language, and culture, do you understand what I'm saying to you, which is that without a soul, there is no nation? A nation has to be more than a nation simply of income, income distribution, taxation, taxes, money, business. That's all well and good. A nation needs that to be healthy economically. But, you know, as I said, Jesus wrote, what does it profiteth a man who gaineth the world and loseth his soul? And America has lost its soul. That's what I've been trying to scream to you about. Just as a man can lose his soul, a nation can lose its soul. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. What is this with inequality gap? You mean the people who work 12 to 16 hours a day, Mayor de Blasio, are bad, and the bums who sit and suck crack pipes are good? You mean those who came here legally are bad, and those who broke into our country illegally are good? Mr. de Blasio, this is an old story. The demagogue is an old story. It's been around. Well, I should play Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones, and you'll get the picture, because I would tell you I've heard it all before. Then, not to be outdone, Jesse High Jackson, never to miss an opportunity to lie, cheat, and BS the public, in my estimation, blames Wall Street for high black unemployment.
Again, in other words, all the hardworking people of Wall Street are suddenly criminals. Those who get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, those who work 16 hours a day and worry about doing the right thing for themselves and their family, they're the criminals. And the bums who are sitting at home collecting welfare are the good people, Jackson? Listen to clip 4. You're not going to believe this.
Well, it's in that you have Wall Street and Harlem on the same island. And you think, when you think about Yahoo and eBay and companies like Amazon with no blacks on the board, that creates disparity. Mm-hmm. You think about the tremendous number of IPOs this year, these initial public offerings with no blacks, Latinos, or women involved in them. So we're releasing a study tomorrow on the 100.
Ah, come on already. Gangsterism. Criminal. Shut him up. When does he ever leave the stage? When does this evil end? When does this evil end? You mean if there were blacks on the boards of these companies, they'd be better companies? They'd make more money for their stockholders? Is that what he's saying? Well, then put blacks on the boards who can make more money for the stockholders. But don't put them on there because they look good on a brochure or because they kick back to the kingfish. When does this evil lie end? This lie about non-equal opportunity. We have a black president, a black attorney general, and there's the con man, Jesse I. Jackson, still mumbling about inequality. I can't stand it anymore. My life was stolen from me because of affirmative action. Again, everywhere you turn, communism, gangsterism, like a civil rights mafia at the throat of the productive people in this country. Meanwhile, the commander-in-chief... Commander-in-Chief, Michelle Obama's wife, commander's wife, you didn't hear about this. Poverty and unemployment are at a near record level, are near record levels according to the Daily Caller. The economy's going nowhere. 47 million Americans are on food stamps. And yet aides for First Lady Michelle Marie Antoinette Obama tweeted out a picture of her two dogs dining at a table laid with crystal and china. Bon appetit, the aides added to the tweet, using the language of France's Queen Marie Antoinette. One of Michelle's dogs appears to be wearing a jeweled necklace. The other is wearing a red ribbon. But Obama's media courtiers, according to Neil Munro of the Daily Caller, applauded this ostentatious display of canine luxury. And here's what they said. Beau and Sonny Obama get decked out for the state dinner, and it's pretty adorable, says the headline. Now, remember, in 1980, Nancy Reagan was criticized in the illegitimate press simply because she ordered a new set of china for the White House. The china that Nancy Reagan bought was bought with donated funds, yet the media went crazy, and it was not stopped until 1982. And now we have dogs eating on fine china.
Savage.
You're listening to the Savage
You're
Nation.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
I am trapped between things, so many different things, politically, emotionally, somewhere between heaven and the other place. And every day I wake up and say, how do I get to the other place without crossing the river? I mean, that's really life itself when you think about it. We all want to get to that other, to this place called heaven, rather. We don't want to go to the other place. How do we get to heaven without crossing the river? That's the question. So many of us try visionary experiences with drugs. We try mescaline, LSD, allegedly drugs that take us to heaven. But often the streets are littered with the exact opposite. If you look at Berkeley, California, you see people wandering around blowing bubbles who were leftovers from the 1960s. They tried to achieve visionary experiences with LSD and mescaline, and they wound up in the gutter. But if you look at religions, if you look at the great paintings of history, you will see visions of heaven. Visionary heaven, fairylands, folklore, religion are all about heaven, aren't they? Our dream for a new government in America, which will allegedly give us relief from the hell that this man has put us in, is just another dream. We want that light. We want that unnatural intensity of coloring. We want that unnatural significance of the golden age. We want the golden age. That's what we want. We want a shining to come down to us. We want significant light to shine down upon us, to come down out of the skies, out of the landscape, to bring beauty to us, in other words. So this is not new to our time. See, most of the things that we dream are heavenly turn out to be prisons at the end of the day. But that's a philosophical statement. And I'm not really going somewhere with this with a specific conclusion about vote for, you know, Mac Jones or anything like that. I'm just kind of talking because it's August at the Hotel Savage. But we're talking about this magic that we all want, these magical, lovely islands in the folklore of America. But they exist
and the ancient Celts and the Japanese. Wherever you go, there's always this magical land, the other world of the Hindus, the land that we read about in the Ramayana, which is watered by lakes and with golden lotuses. Rivers, beautiful rivers, blessed by the morning sun, adorned by golden beds of red lotus. Wherever you go, whatever the language, whatever the civilization, whatever the people, whatever the society, the same characteristics appear. Common to virtually all of the religions and all of the peoples, except one. A dream of paradise without killing. Not a dream of raping virgins in the next world, but a paradise on this earth. A paradise that most people can understand. And unless you have a philosophical understanding of the enemy, you're never going to defeat them. Unfortunately, the people in the military who have a philosophical understanding of the enemy have been rooted out by Mr. Hussein Obama. Mr. Hussein Obama and his minions have thrown everyone out of the military who know exactly what the enemy thinks and exactly what the enemy is about and exactly what the enemy, the vulnerabilities of the enemy, rather. They've all been rooted out of the military and out of the intelligence agencies. And so you see, my little discussion here on the Savage Nation is not so insignificant after all, is it? But I'm just talking, is all I'm doing. I have no power whatsoever. Influence, maybe. I don't know. I doubt it. I have no influence. Think of all the community organizers. Think of those funded by George Soros. Think of all of the brain trusts in the media. They have the influence, not me. Take a look at the average cow walking around in America. Cows would have more sense, more common sense. A cow that hears his neighbor cow dying in a slaughterhouse would have more sense than the average American on vacation. Walking around bloated, 300 pounds, 350 pounds, varicose veins bursting in their legs, blue veins in their arms as they lick the ice cream cones, devouring everything edible and inedible in sight. Click, click. Picture, picture. Click, click. Go up the hill, go down the hill. Have we got that yet? Let's go to the art museum. Take a picture of every picture. We got that. We saw that. We saw this. We saw that. Let's devour that. Let's devour this. Click, click. Take that. Varicose veins bursting in their legs. Click, click. Clack, clack. Clackety, clack. Don't talk back. I really like talking about heaven and you know where, the other place, and how all of us dream of this heaven. And it goes back to the ancient worlds, Greek, Roman, Celts, Teutons. Everybody believes of this wondrous world and these paradises that we all want, the New Jerusalem. We all want the New Jerusalem, don't we? Don't we all want the New Jerusalem? You find them in the literature of Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam. And why? What are they all looking for? And by the way, that was classical Islam before it was distorted by Wahhabi Islam. What we're facing now is the curse of Wahhabism, which is a new form of Islam, the most virulent form ever invented. Because there was a time that Islam was relatively peaceful. It was not always like this. There were times in history when Islam got along with its neighbors. But not anymore. Not anymore. So man constantly seeks heaven. Man constantly tries to create heaven, whether it's in his own house, car. Let's say you buy a car. I'm going to talk about heaven and you know where, the other place, for a few minutes. I have to do this for a while, only because I want to. I realize it's out of the ken of talk radio. After all, we are just knuckle-dragging right-wing conservatives. We don't know anything about literature, nothing about religion, nothing about history. No, no, that's only known by Thomas Friedman, the stooge, Obama's mouthpiece at the New York Times. They're the literate ones. Only liberals are the literate ones. Why, those of us on the other side of the aisle can have no education whatsoever, no knowledge whatsoever. They're the knowledgeable ones. So I will then, in my own way, try to explain to you what I'm talking about and where I'm coming from here on the Savage Nation. Let's start with the simple. I'm a champion for America's borders, language, and culture. The Savage Nation, Michael Savage. Borders, language, culture. Does that immediately exclude me from the paradise the liberals have created for themselves? Well, I would hope not, since every nation through history has been defined by a border, by its common language, and by its culture. But not in America. We bomb others to preserve their borders, their language, and their culture. But we erase our borders and bastardize our language and decimate and spit upon our own culture. How is that possible? Well, it's an example of what happens when a nation has an autoimmune disease. I've explained this to you before. I've done it many times for many years. Remember, I'm the master chess player of ideas on the radio, whether you know it or not. I realize my accent sounds like that of a truck driver from Brooklyn. Doesn't matter. If you can get past your own bias and prejudice, you may realize that some truck drivers are smart. Some of them know more than you do, even though you may have a degree in something or other. So let's leave it at that. Borders, language, and culture. You puncture the cell wall of a plant, and the plant dies. The protoplasmic interior oozes out, and bad stuff oozes in. You pierce the cell membrane of any animal cell. Likewise, the cell dies. Why? Because the good stuff oozes out and bad stuff oozes in. You puncture the border of a nation. What happens? Same as a cell. The bad stuff oozes in and the good stuff oozes out. You see, this is how it works, whether it's in biology on a cellular level or nationally on a nation level. And so those of us sitting here watching our nation die in front of our eyes from an autoimmune disease run by a retroviral political structure, that's a nice phrase, an autoimmune disease run by a retroviral political structure. Very interesting, Michael. A-plus to Mike today. Yay, yay. I just hit a home run like Babe Ruth while walking around the bases. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. Tenured college professor who says there's no upward mobility in the United States of America. Listen to clip 8, please, on the Savage Nation.
It's absolutely the case that America is a relatively rich society, though there are plenty of other European societies that are also very rich. But I think an important thing for people is what their relative social position is. And the news there is that it's very hard for groups in society to change their relative social mobility, except in a very large number of generations.
There's no sense to what he's saying. Nonsense whatsoever. Again, this is communist rhetoric. There's no chance of getting ahead in America. There's no fairness. It's all part of the entire conspiracy to destroy our way of life. I disagree with him 100%. You know it's a lie. That's why millions keep trying to break into the country. What are the dreamers here for? They're dreaming to go down the social ladder? Now, I myself, I'm an immigrant son, and I gave a little talk, a six-minute talk on this last summer off the Hudson River in New York. So let's listen to it now, Robert, please.
Is there anyone down below who should be up here that we can browbeat for a few minutes? 100 years ago, my grandfather arrived at Ellis Island in steerage. Many of you have a similar story. Maybe it was more than 100 years ago for you. I'm a first-generation American, so I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world. So when I talk about immigration, I sort of know what I'm talking about. So last night, we went to dinner in Shunley with my agent, Ian. Come back, didn't say a word in the cab. I'm getting out, I'm paying the guy or whatever. He says, are you Michael Savage? He was a Haitian immigrant. You Michael Savage? He said, I'm not your grandfather. I'd rather have my arm cut off than take welfare. See, people don't understand how diversity really is. They assume that it's fractured in this country, that blacks think one way, Hispanics think another way, whites think another way. But we have all these divisions within my grandfather, Sam, who I call the astronaut of my family. It was as though he went to the moon. Look where he came. Didn't speak a word of English. Came here 7 years ahead of the family. Blah, blah, blah. Earned money as a little tailor. Sent it home. Brought my grandmother. Brought my father. And died at a very young age, 47, heart attack. You know, that's how they worked so hard, whatever. Now, then my father died at 57. Never really made it big in the country. Had a little store, 12 blocks from here on Ludlow Street, an antique store. And I wrote about it in Train Tracks. It was all in that book. Owns this yacht. And I'm not here to boast. I'm just here to say it's the American dream. We have lived the American dream through extreme hard work. People don't know he works 24/7. My wife works 24/7. I shouldn't say it. Companies don't run themselves, as you know, whether it's Westwood One, John and Lou Dickey, Hachette. Someone's running those companies. If salesmen aren't producing, they're fired, right? I heard silence go through the room. I mean, if my son ran Westwood, one half of you wouldn't be here, for example.
I'll be the bad guy tonight.
Well, he just fired half his staff in New York today. But anyway, the point is, we're living the dream. But what my grandfather fled and his great-grandfather fled was communism, Bolshevism, revolution. What do we have in America today? We have $27 million apartments on Jane Street. I took a bicycle ride today. I saw a building. It was a former nursing home, the painter told me. Red brick building looked like a school. So I said, how much do these cost? Are they condos? He said, no, man, they're for billionaires. How much are they? He said, $25 million for these two floors, and they're putting $5 million into it. I said, what? He said, yes, that's what they're putting into this building. This is what's going on. We have two societies, right? Three, maybe? High, low. God knows where the middle class is going to end up. But we have people who would like to stop that. We have people who would like to end it. We'd like people who like to take it away, turn the city back, turn the country back. And the answer is somewhere in the middle, isn't it? Isn't it somewhere in the middle where everyone can dip their beaks, as the Godfather said? Everyone can feed a little bit in our country. But we don't want Bolshevism. We don't want communism, do we? But we have the same forces that operated in Russia are now operating in the West. And that's what we have to be cognizant of. And that's what my show is about. It's not the extreme element of screw the poor, let them eat cake, let them eat peanuts. The issue is don't take from those who have worked so hard. Don't steal it from them, because without them, there'd be nothing. We'd have one salami in the butcher store like they had in the Soviet Union. Remember what Russia was like when you were a kid? Many of you are over 50. Remember the images of the Soviet Union? People lining up around the block? One salami in the butcher store. Why? Why would the butcher invest in a piece of meat? Why would the farmer raise the cows if he couldn't sell it and make a profit? People don't even understand what the profit motive is. It's not all evil. It's become a dirty word, right? Hasn't capitalism become a dirty word? Is it a dirty word? The whole world runs on that. So what I'm saying is, thank God we have a capitalist system. It's not evil. It's good. And I'm glad we're here. I'm not going to get to the gecko thing of greed is good. I'm not going. I didn't go there. All I said was, capitalism is good, investment is good, business is good, sales are very good. Ratings are even better. And I want to thank you all for taking time out on a sweaty August day. It was a last minute thing. My son's boat was at Fort Lauderdale, and I conclude with this. And we're supposed to go on a father and son vacation. We've never done it. We're both afraid of each other. We're both too hard-headed to spend any time in a tent. Hunting moose. Fishing. We don't like killing things. We like eating them, but not killing. So we were going to go to Alaska, then we were going to go to Canada. Then we said, what the hell are we going to do in Alaska? Well, you can look at the hookers without teeth in the bar. What the hell? Well, what are we going to do in Canada? Well, there's always the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I mean, I don't know. So he said, Dad, let me send the boat up to New York. I said, okay, that was last week. I said, okay, if you do, I'll invite my friends from Radio Cumulus, publishers Kate Hachette, and a few other people. And here you are, and you came on the last minute. It's a hot night. I'm sure you'd rather be getting ready for your Labor Day weekend. I want to thank you all for coming to join us here, and may we all enjoy the success that we deserve. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And that's the personable Michael Savage with three drinks under his sails. It was a hot August night, and the wine was very good, and the crowd was very nice, and it was a little different than radio. You can hear it. But it's a true story. It's an immigrant son, and it shows upward mobility. Now, you could say, oh, the decks were stocked because you're a white guy. Hey, everyone opened the skids up for you. Well, it wouldn't be true if you thought that. It'd be true that you're thinking it, but it wouldn't be true because that's not what happened. I was blocked every step of the way. Whatever I did, I had to fight for. I had to fight for everything I ever did. And then, after I got my doctorate from a great university, I was told white men need not apply, so don't tell me the skids were greased for me. The opposite was true. In many cases, the skids were taken away from me. and given to people like Barack Obama, and take a look at what we got from that. But nevertheless, it's not about Obama. It's about the American dream. It's very much alive, which is why millions of people are clamoring to break into our nation.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
I've covered the news of the day. I've covered all of the Democrat-Republican garbage of the day. I've called them the Republic Sin Party, which I'm surprised hasn't been stolen yet. I want to talk instead about how has pornography affected your life. Why? We know that Boehner is a pornographic image to those of us who are conservative. Pornographic in the sense that it is both offensive to see what this man has done to us, see him hanging on Obama's shoulder like that in such a servile manner. Pornographic in a different sense than you might think. I don't mean in visual or erotic imagery, but pornographic in what he's done to this budget. But let's talk about the real stuff. An article came out in the Washington Times saying pornography use affects real relationships. Men who regularly watch pornography are more likely to depend on it to stay aroused, but are less likely to enjoy sex with a real-life partner, a new study says. Now you say, well, why are you covering this? Why am I covering it? Because there is a scourge of pornography in America under Obama, unlike ever before seen in America. It makes the Weimar Republic, pre-Hitler, look like as Snow White was running Germany. Now, what does it have to do with Obama? You say, well, why are you blaming him for this? Are you ready for this? Because during Eric Holder's six-year reign of terror, he refused to initiate even one new obscenity indictment during his entire tenure. And the study author says, as a result, Holder bears much responsibility for pornography's pandemic of harm. Said Mr. Truman, who served as the chief of the Justice Department's Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section of the Criminal Division from 87 to 93. So, I thought that since this study came out and since finally someone's talking about issues such as pornography and the epidemic of pornography and how it is affecting the society, and we've not heard much about it under this administration, I would ask you, how has pornography affected you and your relationships? I think it's a fair question. How do you want to talk about this? Do you want to talk about? Do you know anyone addicted to pornography, or it's you? Now, you may be surprised to find out that many women are addicted to pornography, and it's affecting them. And what do you consider pornography is a big issue? Remember, there was a movie about this. I remember how, who's the guy who ran Penthouse magazine? The guy got shot in the groin. Larry Flint was shot in the groin by a man who was incensed by his decimation of the American society through the magazines that he was putting out, debasing women. But he hired a shyster lawyer who was glorified by Hollywood, who argued that there is no such thing as pornography. It's all about community standards. And since the communities have no standards, there is therefore no pornography. So what do you consider to be pornographic? Has pornography affected a marriage or any of your relationships? What is the actual appeal in pornography? Now, the most interesting part of this article to me is this line. It says, pornography use affects real relationships, right? So I go down in the article, and you know, you get the normal stuff. The part in it that I found most interesting is about the fact that most pornography omits acts of tenderness, intimacy, verbal compliments, laughing, or even kissing and hugging, she wrote, citing a 2010 study that she did with colleagues. Most pornography omits acts of tenderness, intimacy, verbal compliments, laughing, or even kissing and hugging, she wrote. And that's probably the most damaging part of pornography from my point of view. And here's a little secret, men. Men need that tenderness, that intimacy, that verbal support, the laughter, the kissing and the hugging, as much as the women do. Only men have been conditioned to think that their entire sexuality resides in only one portion of their anatomy. And that's a very sad comment on reality. I'm not going to say any more about it because people will misinterpret what I'm saying. But human sexuality, being as complicated as it is,
is geographically 360 degrees. It is not 5 to 10 degrees of a person's anatomy. And when pornography omits tenderness, intimacy, verbal compliments, laughing, or even kissing and hugging, what that says to young men who are watching it is, if they feel those desires, that maybe there's something wrong with them. And what does it say to a woman that porno omits tenderness, intimacy, verbal compliments, laughing, or even kissing and hugging? And then women start to seek out violent pornography themselves, but they won't admit it to their mates because they're ashamed of those impulses. And so they go to the pornography for that gratification of that portion of their being. I'm not an expert on the subject, but truthfully, as a mature American, we're all sort of knowledgeable about these things one way or the other. And so I'll ask you again, how does pornography make you feel? Do you agree with having that kind of industry? Should it be curtailed with the new Republican administration? Good luck come January, right? I mean, we know that Eric Holder is the reason that porno is out of control. You can't go into a hotel room today, even the Mormon-run hotels. Whatever hotel chain the Mormon folks own, they used to prohibit pornography until they found that it was one of the largest cash generators in their entire hotel chain was the late-night porno on the televisions, because a lot of guys travel, they're alone, they're lonely, and the way it's billed on their hotel bill, it doesn't say for pornography, it says, I don't know what it says, access to whatever, computer, whatever they couch it now, so no one knows what they're downloading or watching in their room, and as a result, the chain makes a lot of money off. It's a big dollar industry. Now, the pornography industry is so rampant in this country, especially under Obama. He didn't start it, but he did not curtail it. You have to understand the effects it has, not only domestically, and how it decimates relationships, destroys the minds of boys who think that they're not potent enough because they can never compare anatomically to the male models in these acts. The women feel impotent because they can't match the pseudo orgasmic behavior of the women, but it affects our standing around the world where the Muslim world hates us for it. It's why the Taliban kill. You may hear it's over Israel, but it isn't over Israel. It's over the pollution of their sons and daughters' minds because of the industry called pornography. So it's a valid question. It's an important topic. I'm not going to just be Mr. Moralistic. I'm not as pure as the driven snow. I'm not better than anybody else, but it's a great social topic. It's worth talking about. Pornography use affects real relationships is the article. And the fact is there seems to be finally someone saying something about it. And many of you are addicted or have been ruined by pornography or lives are wrecked by it right now, and you won't talk about it. But under Eric Holder, there's not been one new obscenity indictment during his entire tenure. And as a result, the Attorney General bears much responsibility for pornography's pandemic of harm, according to an individual who worked in the Justice Department's Child Exploitation Obscenity Section, which apparently doesn't exist anymore. So this is way beyond the Weimar Republic, for those of you who understand the social chaos that resulted in Germany, in pre-Hitler Germany before 1933. And believe me, there is no essential difference between Obama's and the leadership of the Weimar Republic. It's the same liberal mentality, the same diseased mind that's come back to haunt us in this case. And when this kind of social disease appears on Earth, nature usually follows it by the opposite. When the world collapses this way, what happens? So what inevitably follows this kind of decadence, I'm asking? Simply this, at some point, anarchy and social decay are followed by tyranny and oppression as they were in Weimar Germany. You say it can't happen here? Read Stop the Coming Civil War. But we're talking about the decimation of families in America. The divorce rate is through the roof. Women can't find husbands. Men don't want to have children. The birth rate is below that of replacement amongst white men in America. They can't be fathers. They're afraid of being fathers. They don't want to have children. They don't want the responsibility. So what's the reason? There are many reasons, the women's movement primarily, but pornography is another element of the reason that men are not
about
marrying.
How has pornography affected you?
And what most struck me in this study is this. Most pornography omits acts of tenderness, intimacy, verbal compliments, laughing, or even kissing and hugging. And what's interesting in that is that many women are now acting out the roles of the skank models in the porno movies, the tattooed skanks. There's no tenderness. There's no intimacy. There's no verbal complimenting. There is no laughter. There's no kissing. There's no hugging. It's all cartoonish. It's cartoonish, and you can giggle about it. You can do a Beavis and Butthead on yourself and say hee-hee, ha-ha, ho-ho, and make dirty jokes. But apparently, there is an epidemic of what they call erectile dysfunction. In my day, it was called something else. It was called impotence. But they changed it. Now, they're very clever, the marketing folks. So I says, are you impotent? No, an IBD. Or, what's that? Oh, no, it's a condition. It's like the sniffles. Really? And how do you treat that? Just a little pill. All right, fine. If it works, God bless us. Guys are taking it every day. They don't know that there are health deficits to taking Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. Now they have one that you can put under your tongue, and it's instant. So if the guy goes to a bar and gets lucky and he's on the way home, he can make believe he doesn't have ED. He can lean out the car window, you know, and put it under under his tongue. But I guess you'd have to time that pretty close. Pretty closely. And I did mention in passing, and it's only in passing. I don't know how valid the study is. I try to see if it was a strong or weak study. But in May of this year, May of 2014, I saw studies showing a putative link between the use of Viagra-like drugs and an increase in melanoma, skin cancer. And I mean alarmingly, like 84% increase. I said, what? And I said, that can't be so. Maybe it's a weak study. Maybe it's another nonsense study. I don't know. But, you know, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. You got to be very cautious. You know, not everything that you read is true, and not everything you read is false in that regard in the popular media.
I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Why couldn't he just stay in China with a mouse suit on? Thank you. Why couldn't they make him honorary something in China and let him stay there with a mouse suit the rest of his life? Why did he have to come back to plague us? To fight with America, to hate the people, to hate the government, to be a man unto himself, a law unto himself, a man ready to destroy our borders, language, and culture. But I wanted to do a positive story because something positive happened. Something very positive happened, and it shows the power of talk radio. And that is that Maddie, the wounded dog, has been reunited with the wounded soldier because of the Savage Nation. Now, I'm not going to sit here and take credit for it because this was a collective effort. I would say let Scarface, the Scientologist on Fox, declare that she did it. Scarface actually threw the father off after about a minute of programming because he wasn't slick enough or quick enough for her. But okay, let Scarface, Facebook, everyone saying she did it. I really don't care. All that matters is that there are no villains here. There are only heroes. And it's just not right. It's that simple. This is just not right. Where is this dog? Why did they take it from him? Army regulations say he's allowed to adopt the dog. Bill Clinton, to his credit, signed that bill in the year 2000. He filled out the adoption papers. He comes back. They take the dog. They give it to some private company that no longer exists, K2 Solutions. And then the dog disappears. And the wounded war dog and the wounded vet have been reunited. And I would say, personally, there's a collective effort here. But the radio show that I run, which is on over 250 stations or so, reaches an awful lot of people immediately in a more immediate manner than the printed word does. It's still the most powerful medium there is. Radio as a mass communication medium has been around a very long time. And as a method of communicating to the masses, radio is probably the most powerful method of reaching people, by the way. The Internet is strong, but people have to go somewhere to get the news on the Internet. They have to download things. They have to read it. Okay? Television, yes, it's there, but it's old by the time the news comes on. But radio is instantaneous. And I would say that the show I did on Veterans Day about the wounded dog and the wounded vet, you know, reached a lot of people. And the reason I would say that is that several people called my screener who wouldn't go on the radio, who was so angry that they said they're going to call friends who are brigadier generals. And I think that behind the scenes, that is why the dog was reunited. And I want to repeat again, there are no villains here, only heroes. And I especially want to thank the Savage Nation audience. You may say I had nothing to do with it.
Well, you did. You don't understand this. You did have something to do with it. Many of you emailed and called your congressmen, your senators. Many of you made phone calls. And I actually believe that Einstein was right when he said we're all part of the same organism. This is very interesting. Believe me, when there's a collective consciousness for something, that collective consciousness has an effect, which is why the left is so dangerous. They have invaded the collective consciousness of the nation and the world to such an extent that their big lie has become the truth. But that's a topic for another day. The positive nature of the collective consciousness is such that your thinking about the dog being returned, your wanting the dog to be returned, made it happen. That's what the collective consciousness is. And Einstein wrote about it. He said that we're all part of the same organism, which is very interesting. But it's a topic for another day. I just want to say thank God for the Savage Nation. Thank God for radio. And thank God that the dog is back with his rightful owner. There are no villains. Nobody stole a dog. Nobody took the dog on purpose. Nobody profited from it. It was just a series of events, bureaucracy at work, and frankly, I'm shocked that the right thing was done only a few days after I ran the story on last Veterans Day. And, you know, rather than talking in generalities about veterans, we picked one veteran to help, and you did. One man has been helped. One American hero who will be injured the rest of his life from the vermin who set up a roadside bomb, the practitioners of the religion of peace who set up an IED, injured his spine. The 6'6" gentle giant, the real giant is this man, and his spine was blown up by the practitioners of the religion of peace in Afghanistan, as was his dog. And the guy flew back on the crate in the airplane. Can you believe how much these people were connected to the dog and the man? The man, the soldier, flew back and slept on the crate where the dog was. When he landed in New Jersey, he rightfully understood he had to give the dog up to the military for processing, and he didn't resist. He said, okay, he knew he'd get his dog back. This dog, Maddie, this big, beautiful Czech Shepherd, tried to bite his way out of a metal cage. He's so attached to this man. I mean, this is a movie, by the way. I mean, some screenwriter can do a movie on this, and I don't need any credit for it. It's this soldier's credit. Give him some credit. Let him make some money. He's the one with the injured spine, not me. Anyway, because of this, the power of this story, you understand what I'm saying? Because of this, the wounded dog and the wounded soldier are united because of the Savage Nation. It's the whole story. And the power of radio. It's that simple.
Savage.
Explain it, because when they're explaining it to me, it sounds amazing, but I'd like to hear it from you.
We're going to pull together private philanthropists, foundations, working with governors and mayors and churches and nonprofits, and we're just going to focus on young men of color and find ways in which we can create more pathways to success for them.
I'm speechless at the naked racism of our president. He is now singling out one race and saying he's going to put out a new initiative to help young men of color. And listen, the name of it is called My Brother's Keeper. It's almost a parody of itself, how obnoxious this is. He told it to some fool on television I never heard of, another bootlicker, that he wants to create special programs only for blacks. He wants to expose young men of so-called color to career options that could pay as much as $35 an hour. And Obama went on to say, did he say more about across the board from the time they're young all the way to their first job, we want to help more young African-American men and Latino men succeed, he said. I ask you, what about the young, poor white man looking for a job? Where are the programs to help the young, poor white man get a start in the world? Where are the mentors and the interns for poor white kids? Martin Luther King Jr. once said, I have a dream that one day children would live in a nation where they would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And yet we have a president who is of such low character that he turns Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream into a nightmare and wants to help only young men of color, spitting in the face of, I guess, people of non-color. And then he went off on a golfing trip with a billionaire. After giving a speech on inequality, your lying, twisted, I can't take this anymore. One of these days I'm going to actually tell you what I think about him. I think that he's demonic. I personally think that Obama is a cold-hearted, psychopathic, demonic man. And I believe he has the worst intentions imaginable for this nation. Other than that, I will spell it out in a long book in October.
I'll give you my evidence. It's as racist as it gets. It's right out of Hitler's playbook. Target the Jews? No. Now you target white people. Same mentality. In Hitler's Germany, they needed a scapegoat to blame all of the problems of Germany on, so they picked the Jews. Here, the left-wing fanatics are using people of color as their shock troops to target the white middle class. Any other questions? I have the answers. So he talks about my brother's keeper for only for people of color, Hispanics, Latinos, African-Americans, but white men need not apply. A president could do a thing like this? And then he goes off golfing at a private golf course owned by Larry Ellison. Larry Ellison is worth $41 billion. Larry Ellison has a house amongst many that sits on 249 acres. It has its own golf course. And so after talking about inequality, Obama goes and golfs with Larry Ellison. And there it is. Then he gives you another speech on inequality and goes to another party or another vacation. And his only friends are the 0001%. And this is what the Democrat Party is the best they can do. It's a party of demagogues and grifters. Now, let me add why I say grifters. Did you hear what came out over the weekend? No, you didn't hear it because it didn't make it to your local worthless newspaper. Democrats who oppose Keystone Pipeline own shares in competing companies. Disclosure documents show that Democrat Tim Kaine and Democrat Alan Lowenthal are invested in Keystone competitors, which is why they oppose the Keystone XL pipeline. And you don't know anything about that. You don't know anything about Kinder Morgan, the Trans Mountain Pipeline, the competitive pipeline. You don't know anything about that. And you don't know how deeply gangsterish the Democrat Party has become, because it didn't make it to your local party rag. I know how demagogues work, because I've studied them. My most recent studies are about an Austrian who lived in Germany in the 1930s, whose first name was Adolf. See, if I don't use his last name, you'll listen to me. If I say the last name, it kills the argument. People go berserk. Their brain tilts. It's like a pinball machine that tilts. You can't hear any of this rest of the conversation. I have been recently steeping myself in studying a man by the name of Adolf who lived in Germany in the 1930s. And I found that all of his tactics of divide and conquer, I found out that he had turned the Parliament of Germany into a rubber stamp. I found out what he did after he turned the Parliament into a rubber stamp. And I am terrified that although we do not have an SA yet in the United States of America, just as the German military had been shrunk as a result of the Treaty of Versailles, and the SA, the stormtroopers, it became a force greater than that of the actual military. Did you know that the brown shirts, the Sturmabteilung, SA, was a force of over 3 million men, that private army of thugs under Ernst Röhm, the homosexual murderer? Ernst Röhm was with Hitler from day one. He was a street thug, a tough guy. He happened to love men in that manner. He had a dueling scar, but that was his proclivity. And many of the leadership in the SA were of his, let's say, same orientation. You don't know that as well, but it's part of history. I'm not saying it to offend anyone. I'm just telling you that was their proclivity. And Hitler was afraid of the SA because there were 3 million of them, and the army of Germany was smaller. Now, Obama's been shrinking the military, firing the combat generals, and he promised us back in 2008 that he'd like to create a private army that's just as strong, just as well-funded as the military itself. If that day comes, I'm warning you what's following. And that's why I study revolutions, and that's why I study history. Because those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat their history. Do you hear what I'm just saying to you? Many people in the Nazi Party disapprove of the fact that Ernst Röhm and many other leaders of the SA were, at that time, homosexuals. You don't understand any of that. It's a horrible story, the Night of the Long Knives. But one day I'll tell the whole story here on the Savage Nation of what Hitler did to them on the Night of the Long Knives. Well, how hard is it? They were having a bacchanal on an island in one of the lakes in Germany. The SA was. They're having a wonderful orgy, in other words. And Hitler had the SS cross the lake in rubber rafts, their faces painted. They were the special forces at the time. And they slaughtered hundreds of them and arrested the others. They got rid of the SA overnight. Now he's been purging the military of combat generals and of leadership up and down the line. He's been shrinking the military. Is he getting ready to create this civilian national security force? I don't know who will stop him. You? John Boehner? Clink's going to stop him? Who's going to stop him? We have a rubber stamp Congress, and we have a power mad maniac in the White House. There is no opposition. You don't think that that could happen here? No. Can't happen here. Not with Twitter. Not with Facebook. Not with Instagram. But you see, if you're looking at some sluts behind on Instagram, you're not watching the bouncing racist ball. It's not golf that he's playing, my friends. Make no mistake about it. Over the weekend, he launched a new initiative aimed only at young men of color. White men need not apply. And ironically, it's called My Brother's Keeper. He wants to help young black men and young Hispanic men make up to $35 an hour as youngsters. And white boys can't apply. Special programs only for African-American and Hispanic youth. Now, if you find that to be the mark of a Democrat, then you're insane. That's the mark of a demagogue. That's a divide-and-conquer demagogue tactic. Divide-and-conquer. Every dictator in history has used divide-and-conquer. And he's building up to something much bigger. Virtually anything could happen at any moment. We're all waiting for it. So I think we have a real fight on our hands. And we have to be very vigilant right now. I want to take a little digression for a moment. I was cleaning out a closet. I found something I want to share with you. Many of you will know, some of you will know. I have in my hand the Bronze Star from World War II, which was earned by an old friend named Herbert Sokol. And he gave it to me on a plaque. When I started in San Francisco on KSFO, I was a local host in 90, I don't know the year anymore, 96, 94. 94. I was still a local host by... till the year 2000. In 1999, this gentleman who had fought with Patton became one of my greatest supporters. He was a huge man, big lumbering man. Well, he loved me. And he gave me this plaque with his bronze medal, which I dreamed. I said, where is it? I was thinking about all my possessions the other night because I'm trying to put them together. I said, what did I do with Herb's bronze medal? That's not something to lose. I found it. Let me read it to you. It's one little thing. To Michael Savage, the original compassionate conservative in love and appreciation, on behalf of all your dedicated listeners, for your fearless declarations of the truth on the Savage Nation, KSFO Radio, San Francisco, this Bronze Star, awarded to Herbert L. Sokol, PFC, 115th Infantry, 29th Infantry Division, for his military exploits during the assault on Jülich, Germany, February 22, 1945, is hereby gifted to Michael Savage as his inheritance. Thank you, Michael Patton Savage, Herbert L. Sokol, June 6, 1999. It is really one of my most prized possessions. It's as though he were an uncle who gave it to me. Now, he died soon thereafter. He was a poor man, didn't have much. Some of you listening may have known him. And I only bring this to your attention, not so much to invoke any semblance of heroism on my part, because I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to show you that there are men who understand what's at stake, and they understand what's going on in this country. And he knew it then. He saw the socialism. He saw the socialists. Only I got news for you out there. We've lost. We've almost lost the battle. And I don't mean it's over yet, because nothing's over till it's over. But we're almost about to enter 1,000 years of darkness. There almost has to be a miracle to save this nation. That's how I see it. I had thought the miracle had occurred several times when Obama got caught in the scandals, when I saw the left turning on him. I thought maybe the miracle had occurred. But I haven't seen it happen yet. I haven't seen the impeachment move. The other night I was listening to a communist station here from Berkeley called KPFA. Its entire thing is left-wing fanatic nonsense. And here were two women talking about the fact that, I mentioned this last Wednesday, the U.S. press freedom had fallen to like number 42 in the world. And they were wringing their collective feminist hands over the fact that our press freedoms had fallen so badly that we were now number 42 in the world behind Uruguay. And I was saying, yeah, and I'm laughing. I said, but you girls did it. You girls did it to us. You gave us this man. You feminists were the original shock troops who broke down the white male hegemony. So we have this guy in the White House. And now what? You're complaining that what you created is a Frankenstein? But I didn't say it because I was in the car alone. The left created the Frankenstein that we have. And now they're complaining that our press freedoms have fallen. I was waiting for them to blame Nixon or Bush. You know, but they didn't. They went on and on. They didn't mention the word Obama once. They're in denial of what they've done to this country. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
Here's what I want to talk about on the Savage Nation. I know it's going to be weird. It's going to be a whack job. Like, where did he come from now? Why is he doing this? No, I'm not going to talk about clinical biochemistry. It's something I could do. I could talk about tyramine, and it can raise blood pressure and cause cardiac arrhythmias and stroke, and how to avoid tyramine in foods. No, I'm not going to do that. And I'm thinking ahead to 2015, and I'm saying, you know what? Politics are the bread and butter of the Savage Nation. I've always been the man promoting borders, language, and culture for 20 years. But, you know, the election was over in November. We know that we have a one-party system. We know that we have an oligarchy. We know that Obama's an out-of-control egomaniac. We know that John Boehner is a useless opposition. We know that the press has been sold out a long time ago. We know all of that. So to hear it every day is boring to you. I'm going to continue to do the news where the news is of some shock value, and you need to talk about it. But you know what I'm going to be doing next year? You're going to help me know what I'm going to be doing next year. Because I know what I'm going to be doing, but you're going to help shape what I'm going to be doing. I'm moving more into the diversity or versatility of topics that I'm famous for. And I want you to call the show right now at 855-407-282. And I want you to tell everyone listening to the show what you'd like me to be doing in addition to politics. I didn't say instead of. I said in addition to politics in 2015. Because I can spin on a dime. I can go from talking about politics to talking about, well, just about anything that I'm familiar with. Because I have a wide knowledge base. It goes back to my natural curiosity, not solely my higher education, which is quite extensive, but my natural curiosity. You know, there are many people who are not formally educated who have natural curiosity and have read widely. Remember what I just said, read widely. Something not understood in this day and age was, in the old days when a person was going for a higher degree, like a PhD, they would say she was reading for her exams. That's how it was put. She was reading for her exams. That's how you worked for your PhD. You read for your exams. You had to read a wide variety of books and then be able to talk about it in some rational, literate manner. Now you say, well, okay, that's book knowledge, which is the problem with Obama and many others in that egghead administration. They may have book knowledge, but they don't really understand the world they live in, and they're very mean people like most academics are, mean and petty. But what if you have a wide book knowledge, and you have street knowledge, and what if you've been very curious about life since you're very young, and you've read widely, and you've inquired widely, and you're interested in a lot of things, as I am. So what topics would you like me to do? I'm going to tell you where I'm going with this. I have a man who has called my show for about 18 years. He used to listen to me on the local station KSFO. He is a palm reader, Vernon Mahalal, and I never met the gentleman. But I've sent him a Xerox of my palm. And I know many of you are devout Christians or devout Jews, and you know that palmistry is forbidden by the Bible. Okay, not my problem, because I'm open to any area of any avenue of learning or any avenue of energy that will lead me to a higher power and a higher understanding of myself on this earth, which is why I spent so many years in the islands and working with folk healers, and you want to call them witch doctors. They weren't witch doctors at all. And you want to mess around with folk healers, you want to mess around with gypsies, go ahead, be my guest. Go and insult a gypsy fortune teller anytime you feel like doing it. Because I'll tell you a little story about gypsies one day, as told to me by a very famous Chinese martial artist who insulted one of them and what happened to him. There are powers you have to understand that go beyond the rational on this earth. And many of you understand that. I am going to be moving a little bit more into the areas of, remember the lifestyle shows I used to do on this show? Remember I would be Doc Savage and you'd call me with a problem, a question like, Mike, I'm 28 years old, I want to get married, but, and I would be the older brother, older father, uncle, and answer your questions. Sort of like a lifestyle coach. You say, well, what's your qualifications? My qualifications are that people trust me and they want to ask me my opinion. It's that simple. Many people don't have a father in this society. Many people don't have an older brother in this society. They don't have the uncle in the society that used to exist. So I play those roles on the radio for many people, and it's a role I'm very comfortable in. I can help people. I'm a healer. I have a natural healer's ability. I've always been a healer.
Savage.